Game On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You're most welcome to Tuesday's Game On. Should he stay, should he go, or should Liverpool just flog him to finance another wasted transfer window? As Raheem Sterling reportedly looks set to tell bosses at Anfield that he wants away from the club in the summer, we will chat to Jason McAteer about comings and goings behind the scenes. Mark Langdon will be here with his weekly look at the European football landscape. We will look ahead to the Battle of the Bay, which takes place at Dolymount Strand this week. Check in at the On Post Ross. And do all of that in the company of Gary Murphy. How are you?
Excellent, Damien. Yourself?
I'm alive and well, thanks be to God. Thank you to Joanne and everyone for stepping in at short notice last night. So I'm back, you're stuck with me for the week now.
Tragic.
Apologies in advance for that. Now, you are a self-confessed Liverpool supporter. Raheem Sterling, he's on 35 grand a week apparently. He wants 160 grand. Liverpool have split the difference and have offered him 100 grand over 5 years. If he tells Brendan Rodgers, I want away, do you cash in or do you try and keep him?
I said it a few weeks ago on the show. I think the way it's gone, it's all agent controlled. And I think Gary Neville made a great point on TV last night that they're supposed to represent the boy. And they're not really. They're trying to cash in on him. They're putting, you know, he's 20 years of age. 100 grand a week is, for a guy who's only scored 9 goals this season, only scored 7 last season, it's not like it's Lionel Messi, you know. So it's, I think, you know, he's a talented kid. But he's getting the wrong advice, undoubtedly.
So, but the big problem is, we were talking about this off air. Liverpool and contracts, it doesn't ever seem to end well.
No, they've let guys go that wanted to go to better clubs, unfortunately. But they haven't, you know, tied them down and done it properly. Whether that's a financial thing, it possibly is. But there's no way that he's entitled to 160 grand a week. You know, if you look at the stats, and stats are pretty stubborn things, he doesn't have the major X factor. And, you know, 16 goals in 2 seasons, it's hardly worth 160 grand a week.
If you've an opinion, 51552, you can tweet the programme at GameOn2FM. We're going to chat about golf as well with Gary later on. In light of Rory McIlroy's quite impressive performance in the PGA Tour over the week, and we'll look ahead to the PGA Championship at Wentworth this week. So all that and more still to come. 51552 at GameOn2FM. But we'll stick with this Raheem Sterling story for our first topic this evening. Liverpool's annual player awards take place in Liverpool City Centre tonight, and as we've alluded to, Brendan Rodgers may want to stay on the mineral water and get an early night, because if you're to believe the newspapers this morning, Raheem Sterling plans on reiterating to his manager and the club's chief executive Ian Ayre tomorrow morning that he wants to leave the club this summer. The 20-year-old has turned down that contract offer, which would see his weekly wage rise from that 35 grand a week to a reported 100 grand a week over 5 years. But where would all of that leave the club's ambitions if he is to depart? Let's hear from one of those groups of players who managed to play for the club that he supported on the terraces as a boy. Former Republic of Ireland international Jason McAteer is our first guest this evening. I'm sure this is the main talking point on Merseyside and will be the main talking point at this gala dinner which takes place later on this evening. With your experience and knowing the relationships that exist between clubs and agents and players, is this to you looking like a player who genuinely wants to leave the club, or is it one who perhaps along with his agent is engaged in all too customary bit of brinksmanship during contract negotiations?
I think looking from an outsider looking in, it certainly looks like it looks a situation where the agent, when you've started looking around, the agent's obviously left his agency that he was with. He's now on his own. He's got 3 or 4 players. He obviously knows the industry and he knows how to make a lot of money and a lot of money quickly, and that's by moving footballers. And moving good footballers as well. At the top clubs, there's a lot of money that changes hands between the clubs and the agents. And I just look at this as an agent who's wrongly advising his player. He's out to make a lot of money very, very quickly. And like I say, just really badly advising his player on what to do. You know, this is a player who's 20 years old, come through the ranks at Liverpool. He's been looked after very, very well. He's now got himself into the first team. He's put a string of good performances together over the last 6 or 7 months. And the agent has obviously had a few inquiries, or he's been busy inquiring himself into who would like to take him. And he's obviously had a few whispers from a few different football clubs, and he's in he's give it to his player, he's enticed his player into the thinking of moving away from Liverpool, and the player's head's been turned, and it looks like he's, like I've said a few times there, he's been really ill-advised.
As a Liverpool fan, would you be fighting to keep him at Anfield, or as we see with the Fenway Sports Group, a young player, they bought him for a couple of hundred grand a couple of years back, do you cash in at this stage?
I think you've got to look at two things. I think firstly, you've got to look at the desire of the player. If he wants away, for the reasons, whatever it is, you know, he's talking about trying to win silverware and it's not money, and well, he's saying all the right things, saying all the things his agent's telling him to say. At the end of the day, it's a 20-year-old kid, at the end of the day, who's very naive, doesn't really know the industry because of the lack of experience he's had because of his tender age of 20, 21. So he's saying all the things I think his agent is telling him to say. Now, the thing about moving away, is he going to play? Is he realistically going to play like he's going to play week in, week out at Liverpool? I'm not so sure. So the desire of the player, I think, comes first. He obviously wants to move away, that he's given this impression. So you've got to take that into account when you're the football club. If you keep him there, does he really want to be there? The second thing is the football club will then put a price on his head, and if it's not matched, then unfortunately, with 2 years, I think he's got left on his contract. He's going to have to, they're going to have to come to some kind of agreement, whether it's stay another year and then he lets him go, or whatever it is. But I personally would put a price out there that probably would meet realistic expectation. I mean, if you go around shoving £50 million on his head, I don't think anyone's going to go near him. I think if you're looking 30, 25, maybe up to 20, I think you might get the player out the club. So it depends on what Liverpool could then go and bring in with £30 million, if that's the money they got, the kind of player they want. And I personally would let him go.
Looking back over the last couple of seasons, well, maybe even over the last decade, time and time again, Liverpool seem to get themselves into difficulty when it comes to contract negotiations. Is it an area behind the scenes at Anfield that they don't particularly cover themselves in glory in?
I think there's always a couple of players that come in, I think with every football club, that don't meet the expectations of the fans and the club. And you know, when you sign for Liverpool, it's not like signing for any other club. Obviously, Manchester United, Chelsea, City and Arsenal come very, very close to it. But the expectation and the legacy and the history of the club weighs heavily on some players, and they can't meet the expectations, and they go wandering off and then end up being sold or moving on. It's a very, very difficult club to play for. I think, talking about Liverpool and the transfer market, obviously they've not wrapped themselves in glory in the last couple of windows. But then again, you could say, you know, bringing in Luis Suarez, Sami Hyypiä, you know, there have been the successes at the football club, and you've got to pat the managers on the back for bringing them players in. But the surprising thing for me with Liverpool is, you know, years ago, certainly when I was at the football club, nothing used to get out. It was all done very, very quietly. Liverpool went about their business and no one got to hear about it. There was nothing said. I understand there's a lot more social media now and a lot more radio and TV and magazines and newspapers and reporters and social media. But it surprises me how much actually gets out of the football club. It was a very private football club, and I think Liverpool should really go back to that. It seems that far too much seems to get out in the open.
But even the extent to which, here we are at the end of the season, this Sterling contract thing has been rolling on since the season got underway. You look at the Steven Gerrard situation before Christmas, where the consensus seems to be, had Gerrard got the contract he wanted, he would have stayed at Liverpool. Is it an area that they need to improve, how they deal with players and the renegotiation of contracts?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the manager decides. He sits down with the owners and decides which way he wants to take the club, in which direction, where he sees his philosophy, where he sees his players fitting into that philosophy, positions. You know, there's a resale value. You know, Liverpool, if you look at, say, Manchester United over the last decade and Chelsea now, they're in a position now where they only change two or three players. It's because they get world-class players in every position. You know, you look at Man United, it was like for like, wasn't it? Ronaldo, Beckham went, Ronaldo come in. It was, you know, when Steve Bruce and Gary Pallister went. Then another, top centre-half, Rio come in, Vidic come in. They just change like for like over the season. There's always two or three players. Chelsea are like that at the minute. You know, everyone goes on about the spend, but Chelsea are in a much stronger position in the transfer market because they only need to bring two or three in. Liverpool, I think, are in this transitional period under Brendan. I still think, you know, the signings he's brought in still need to bed in. They are certainly for the future. The long-term signings, they're not short-term. And nothing's going to happen overnight. So you've got to give them time to settle in and time to understand the philosophy and get going. There needs to be a, you know, sort of a bedding in period, as it were. The stuff you're talking about there with Steven Gerrard, you know, the manager, obviously, in my opinion, obviously feels that he didn't want Steven Gerrard around the football club. You know, they did try and offer him something. It wasn't what Steven wanted. It wasn't what the player wanted. You know, possibly it was a one-year contract. Steven wanted a two-year contract. The money mightn't have met. They couldn't meet in the middle. Steven then decided he wanted to try different ventures, and off he went. You know, there's nothing. Every football club has these kind of situations. Frank Lampard did it at Chelsea. You know, and that's just the way it goes. I think the Raheem Sterling is a little bit different, because it seems to be coming from Raheem Sterling. A lot of the press, a lot of the publicity around it seems to be coming from his side. It doesn't really seem to be the football club. You haven't really seen Brendan Rodgers come out really and give an answer, be outspoken about what he thinks. You know, he's going to be quizzed about it, and he's kind of battered it off, really. But everything seems to be coming from Raheem Sterling's side. So, you know, I've listened to Jamie Carragher over the last few days, what he's been saying, and I would give Raheem Sterling the same advice. Just keep your mouth shut. You've got nothing to say. You know, it'll take care of itself. You know, if you're going to move, you'll move. You don't need to go in the press and do it. You know, just do it quietly and go and speak to the manager. Tell him what you think. If you can't meet in the middle, then obviously things will happen, but you don't need to go in the press and start pushing it.
And the other important thing about this is we all need to think back to what we were like when we were 20 years of age. And, you know, I don't know how many of us would like to meet our 20-year-old selves if we could do it later on in life. But people talked about the need for the big players or the best players at Liverpool to stand up after the departure of Suarez. Sterling would have fit into that category. For a player of his age, how do you think he's dealt with that increased responsibility? How would you assess the season that has been for Raheem Sterling?
I think it's been okay. I certainly don't think he was the player that needed to come in and fill Spurs' boots. I think the expectation there was way too high. You know, you're talking about a 20-year-old who's trying to make an impression in the game, who's trying to learn his trade, who's trying to, you know, pin down one position. Raheem's been moved from the left, from the right. He's played wing-back, he's played right midfield, he's played centre-forward, he's played left of the forward, right of the forward. You know, he's not really becoming a master of one position at the minute. And that may be down to needs must of the team and Brendan Rodgers fiddling and losing Luis Suarez. I wouldn't certainly say he's a replacement for Luis. Luis is the complete player. He's one of the world's greatest centre-forwards when he left Liverpool. And to fill them boots was never really an option for Raheem Sterling. I think his season's been okay. You know, it's difficult to point fingers because he is young. He is slightly immature. And, it takes a lot of experience to play at the top consistently well, week in, week out. You know, his performances have been quite patchy. You know, his final ball lets himself down at times. His, you know, distribution at times, his crossing has been a bit wayward. I don't think he chips in with enough goals. And I think he's got a little bit lost, really. I think with all the hype and the expectation of him, I think it's clouded probably his recent performances. Certainly since he's been in the press about moving, he hasn't certainly looked comfortable. He had a fantastic spell towards the back end of last season. But then again, the whole team was playing well, and you know, when the whole team plays well, it's very difficult to put a bad performance in. So, you know, I just think the whole matter, I think he's being ill-advised. You know, he's got to understand, I think if he went to any club in Europe, being Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Manchester City, possibly Arsenal, he's not going to play in the first team. At Liverpool, he's going to get first team football week in, week out with a crowd that adore you. You know, with a club that's moving in, for me, in the right direction, with a good young manager who's got good potential to get the team back to where it is. I think Raheem Sterling, you know, if you're on 100 grand a week, you know, and he wants 160 grand, that'll come. If he stays two more years at Liverpool and moves, he'll end up getting 200 grand a week because he's a lot older and a lot more finished. So, you know, the money will come back to him. He's got to listen to the senior players. He's got to listen to Steven Gerrard, Roy Evans when he gives him advice, Jamie Carragher, because these are the players that know what they're talking about. And I really hope, for the sake of the player, I'm not just saying as a Liverpool fan, I really hope for the player he decides to stay at Liverpool, because it would be the best thing for him, just maybe for another season, maybe another two.
How much business does Brendan Rodgers need to do in terms of bringing players in during the summer?
Well, I said there, he's got a very young team. I think you've got to balance that with experience. Losing Steven Gerrard to Jamie Carragher a few seasons ago was a massive impact on not only the team, but the football club as well. Losing Steven's voice, presence, his maturity around the football club is a massive loss. And I think that needs to be replaced. You know, I understand the sell-on and buying good young players with potential. But I think Liverpool now, I think, have put a squad together to cope with the demands of the games that are coming up their way, whether it be Europa League football next season or the Cups in the league. The squad's there to deal with that many games. I think now what they've got to be able to deal with is the big games, the pressure games, and with that becomes players with experience in the team who know how to play at that level, who know how to win a football match. And I don't think Brendan's got enough of them players. You look around and, you know, we're talking now Martin Skirtle, Jordan Henderson. You know, in fact, you'd even probably throw in, you know, because you're losing Johnson as well. You throw in probably Lovren in there as well, who's quite young. You know, these aren't the finished article. I think you need some real top quality finished marquee signings. And I think Brendan, whatever the budget may be, I think he needs to bring two or three players in. Certainly in midfield, I think he needs two strikers, because it was quite apparent that it was goals that were a problem this year, where last year they weren't. And I'd bring in a right back as well. So, yeah, maybe four players, but marquee.
You have a big night ahead.
I have. I'm at the awards tonight. It's the Liverpool Awards at the Echo Arena. I think it's going to turn more into the Steven Gerrard tribute night. But I'm looking forward to it.
The Eagles haven't had as much of a farewell tour as poor Steven Gerrard has had at this stage. I wonder, like, knowing him as you do, is this type of thing that he would enjoy, or would he even be sick of all the talk of leaving Liverpool at this stage?
Steven, yeah, I mean, he's quite a quiet character. He shies away from anything that's non-football related, really. He wants to be in the papers for football performances rather than things he does off the pitch. Ooh. Obviously, the big dues, the official dues, the ones the club are putting on for him, he'll go and enjoy himself. But there'll be a lot more to do that he probably will end up doing his head in, to be fair. And he'll probably just want it all over with. You know, there's only so many times you can smile. There's only photographs and autographs he's going to have to sign, because there's a real clamour now for that autograph and that picture, because people think he's never coming back. Yeah, he probably will get to the point of it, you know, all being just too much. And you could sense that on Saturday, you know, certainly with the results. He just wanted to get off the football pitch, didn't he? He kind of had enough of it in the end. But he's going to have a few more nights like this to do. But at the end of the day, he's a victim of his own success, because the man's an absolute legend.
So it'll be one of those nice, quiet nights. You'll be tucked up in bed with the cocoa before the late news, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know about that. Okay. Well, there's still one going to go, and no one's Steven Gerrard after two professional years. You probably will leave this event tonight at half 10.
And you'll be still there when the breakfast has been served tomorrow morning. Which is
I'll be there. I'll be there. Don't worry about that.
Jason, enjoy your evening. Good to talk to you as always. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks very much. Thank you. Take care.
That's Jason McAteer, 51552. Plenty of texts. Tom and Kilkenny, they should let Sterling go. Got either Milner or Walcott in. Both proven Premiership players. Get rid of him. He's not worth the bother. We need world-class players to get back on track, is another texter. There's more strength in a fizz bag than in a shot from Sterling. If you blow at him, he would fall over. That's from Joe in Cork. What's a fizz bag? Am I showing my... Is that those, like, sherbet bags?
Yeah.
Is it? You're a...
Yeah, I'm partial to the sweets, unfortunately.
That's not what I was trying to get at. Lads, I think Liverpool are a bit big for their boots. It's not the 70s or the 80s, it's not even the 20th century. They're not the club they think they are, although Sterling is not the player he thinks he is. But if I was him, I'd leave. Also, why is Grealish regarded as a man at 19 while footballers older than him are kids or boys? And no history should be pressurising any young lad. Nearly all of Liverpool's history is before most of them were born. Hi lads, is what happening with Raheem Sterling and Liverpool exactly the same thing as what happened when Liverpool took him from QPR? Exactly. Liverpool waved cash at him when he was at QPR, and now someone else is going to come and wave cash at him and he'll disappear off somewhere else. That's football.
Yep, that is football, tragically.
A club doing better than the one he's at flutters its eyes at him and he's gone. Loyalty died when Gerrard and before him Giggs finished. That's from Frank in Carlow. As a Liverpool fan from Paul in Cork, I'd dump Sterling for any decent money. He doesn't deserve to be at a real club, so let him off to the likes of City or Chelsea. City or Chelsea fans, you're welcome to your writer response. 51552 at Game On 2FM. But the one I want to get to you with is Ken. Gary says Raheem Sterling is not worth 100 grand a week. Well, are journeyman pros worth the sizable prize money they pick up week in, week out on both the European and US tours? Question mark.
Ken, for a start, I hate that comment, journeyman pro. There's a lot of really good guys struggling to make a living on the European Tour at a cost every year. They don't have their job guaranteed at the end of the year like footballers do. They can sign a 5-year contract for 100 grand a week regardless of performance. And if you look at someone of that so-called journeyman pro that he's talking about, someone like Graham Storm, really good player, has won tournaments, big events. He's struggling of late. He's played 11 times this year and he's won 13 grand. It would have cost him at least probably 55 to 60 to earn that. And if he doesn't get his finger out, he's going to lose his card at the end of the year. So it's a completely different thing. It's impossible to compare the two.
I'm looking at the Spanish Open leaderboard. James Morrison won it, $250,000. You had five guys won 99 grand, then you're 50 grand. And then very quickly you get down the leaderboard to like 19, 15.
Yeah, but golfers have expenses every week to go play.
Yeah, the lowest prize money given out in the Spanish Open was 2,247, which presumably a week in Barcelona, plus your flights, plus everything else.
And that's gross as well. There's 20% withholding tax, and you got at least a grand for your caddy. Then you got your hotel and your flights, maybe bring a friend out, whatever. Mm. So look, Tom Murray, who finished last, is probably owed $2,000. And Raheem, who wouldn't beat snow for hope at the moment, is picking up $35,000 for the week.
The issue for Liverpool fans, and Jason made the point there that, you know, if you cash in, you've got the money to spend. Liverpool, I'm going to stand over the comment about Liverpool have handled contracts really badly the last couple of years. Reina, Mascherano, Agger. Alonso, different because he'd have fallen out with Benitez around the time of the birth of his child and not wanting to play in a European game, so it was slightly different. And Liverpool, if Liverpool get $40 million for Raheem Sterling, they'll end up doing what they did with Alberto Aquilani. And every club in the world knows they've got 20-odd million, and they ended up buying Alberto Aquilani for 20-odd million because they sold Alonso. And they'll just end up having the same misspent money in the transfer
window. We could sign another two Lovrens for $40 million.
Statistically, the best central defender in the Premier League, according to a poll that came out yesterday. And as you said to me earlier on, the stats don't lie.
If I was managing Drogheda United and he moved to Drogheda, I wouldn't sign him.
Mark Langdon of the Racing Post is with us. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Yourself, Damien?
I'm in good form. We're debating Raheem Sterling, or Raheeny Sterling. Raheeny's a part of Dublin. If you put Raheem into your iPhone, it comes up as Raheeny. Your thoughts? Will he stay? Will he go? Or is this just, give me another $60,000 a week in my contract negotiations?
No, I think he will go. I think he's sort of making his position, you know, almost so that he can't come back, really. And I think that's just how he wants it. But I always find it very strange when, you know, clubs start complaining about this. I mean, it needed sort of Sterling to kick up a bit of a fuss when he was at QPR to go to Liverpool. And if you have a look at all the players, you know, over the years, there is just a general sort of food chain, isn't there? You know, when Luis Suarez went to Liverpool, Ajax fans weren't happy about that. When Henderson went, you know, Sunderland fans would have been upset that he left them to go to Liverpool. It's just the same all over, really. I know Sterling's not handled it very well, but there is like a natural food chain, and you've only got to look at the clubs that want Sterling. It's okay saying he's no good and he hasn't proven anything, but I think Manchester City and Arsenal and possibly even Bayern Munich, you know, believe there's a real player in there.
This last comment on Sterling, aside from whatever texts come into the programme, I saw a kid on Dorset Street last week, this is a true story, Friday, with the brand new Liverpool kit, which only came out on Friday, with Sterling 31 on the back. So there's a lesson to be learned there. If you get the brand new jersey on the day it comes out, hold off until the transfer window closes, until you get a name printed on the back.
Yeah, get Lovren's jersey.
Yeah, Lovren's not going anywhere. Statistically, the best central defender. Mark, to have a chat about the European leagues, I suppose we best start with Barcelona. Got over the line, league champions crowned Sunday evening. Perhaps not in the most spectacular of fashion, though.
No, but I think that Barcelona maybe showed their improvement in recent months by the fact that they were able to go to the Vicente Calderon, keep a clean sheet, you know, remain solid. And if you do that, when you've got the quality, particularly of Lionel Messi up front, you can win matches. I think the problem for Barcelona earlier on is that they weren't defending very well. And it was, you know, it was often that Messi and Neymar and Suarez were having to score too many goals. But now they're looking much better defensively. I think we saw that in the Champions League semi-final, the first leg, not necessarily the second leg, but when the game was already over. But they're defending well. And like I say, when you've got Messi up front, I mean, he scored a brilliant goal on Sunday. It was absolutely fantastic. And it's great to see him playing right at the top of his game at the moment.
But when you look at it, a couple of months ago you and I would have been talking about who was going to replace Enrique when he left the club, such was the pressure that was on him mid-season, and here all of a sudden he has them on course to arguably emulate the great Guardiola team.
Yeah, it could well be a treble because they're in the Spanish Cup final against Athletic Bilbao and they'll expect to win that. There is still a feeling in some parts of sort of Spanish football that maybe Enrique is not doing that much in terms of managing the team, and it's basically the players, you know, just going along and doing it as they see best for the team. Messi dominating the attack, and you know, Rakitic and Iniesta doing likewise in midfield, and the defence kind of looking after itself. I think that's a little bit unfair, and but it's always going to be the accusation, I think, with most Barcelona coaches, that that's the way it is. And I think that Messi showed that he's the real boss back in January when he kicked up a fuss after they got beat by Sociedad, and that was sort of, if you like, the real beginning of the upturn in fortune. So maybe what looked like being a terrible moment for the club has actually turned out to be a brilliant one. But I think that Messi showed then that maybe Enrique's power at Barcelona is pretty low, and that the players are the real sort of kingmakers, if you like, in all of this.
Have you seen the reports within the past hour or so that Xavi will hold a press conference on Thursday and will announce his departure at the end of the season? So unlike Steven Gerrard, he's kind of left it last minute and probably won't quite have the send-off that that Gerrard has had from Liverpool.
No, it won't be quite the same, but I think you will still see on at the weekend when they play Deportivo a real sort of spectacular you know, goodbye for him, really. It won't quite be sort of Steven Gerrard style. I'm not sure that Xavi would actually want it to be like that. He's quite an understated performer, but he's just been incredible for Barcelona and Spain. Maybe it was one season too many, and I think that maybe some of their early season problems did involve the fact that when Xavi and Iniesta were playing together, you know, they couldn't quite get that midfield going. Since Rakitic has come in and replaced Xavi, that they've looked a lot better that free there with Busquets as well. So he's a difficult player to drop, given what he's won in the game. But I think eventually they made the right decision to bring Rakitic in.
We pretty much have the curtain drawn now on the main European leagues. We know the destiny of all the silverware, or certainly the likely destiny of all the silverware.
It's a little bit of a shame that there isn't much drama at the top. You know, Paris Saint-Germain have won the league, Barcelona have won the league, Bayern Munich, Chelsea. I think that maybe the Champions League and the amount of money that comes in to these now sort of super clubs is decimating the domestic game, because we could be seeing doubles and trebles all over the place. Juventus are going for a treble. They're in the Coppa Italia final against Lazio on Wednesday. PSG could win a treble. Barcelona could win a treble. So maybe there's something to look at there, that you know, the biggest teams are becoming too big for some of the leagues. There is still something to play for at the bottom of some of these leagues. I just point out that the German league at the moment, nobody is relegated going in to the final round of matches, but Hamburg are in a terrible situation. It's out of their hands. They need to win and hope for results to go their way elsewhere. They've never been relegated from the Bundesliga. The only club that's played in the Bundesliga in all of its existence, and that could well change at the weekend. They've even got a clock in their stadium which says how many minutes they've been a Bundesliga club. So I don't know what will happen if they do go down. They've got Schalke on Saturday, but it's looking likely at the moment.
It's like those workplaces that have the clocks about how many days it's been since a serious accident. I always think you're just asking for it. You mentioned the big clubs, PSG, Juve, Bayern, Barca, Chelsea, we could go on. Probably all linked by their opposition to financial fair play. And UEFA have kind of backed down in spectacular fashion about how they were going to try and put manners on everybody financially.
Yeah, they have. I mean, it looks like you'll be able to invest more money. Platini has not come out and actually said exactly what these details are going to be, but it will be that clubs that are backed by these big investors will be allowed to put more money in than they were sort of this season and last year. I think this basically comes down to the fact that there are a few court cases out at the moment saying that this is just against European Union rules, and you know, that the people that are fighting in the courts are pretty adamant that they'll beat you away for it if it goes that far, because you know, clubs should be allowed to spend whatever they see fit. And it looks like Platini will back down. It can only be an advantage to the bigger teams, and you know, that gulf between the best and the rest is only going one way, I'm afraid. I'm not quite sure now how you can ever get that back.
But to finish, inherent in all of this, does it not just remind us that the European Clubs Association are truly the power brokers in European football rather than the governing body?
Well, yeah, I mean, without the clubs, there is no Champions League, is there? I mean, the Champions League, it came about because that they were scared of a breakaway league, a European Super League, and we've got a situation where I think the group stages now have become a little bit too sort of the same, haven't they? We've seen the same teams playing the same teams over and over again. I know they've changed that for next season. The seeding will be different, so maybe we'll get some different groups. Real Madrid, for instance, are in Pot 2. rather than pot one. So we may get some different matchups, but ultimately, yeah, the power lies with these big clubs, and I don't see how that will ever change now.
To finish, somewhat of a controversy, am I right in saying, in Turkish football this week, and comments made about the dedication with which a goalkeeper tried to stop a shot from Wesley Sneijder.
Yeah, Galatasaray against Gensabili. It was a game that was heading for a draw, and Wesley Sneijder took a shot from around about the penalty box that sneaked its way in. I think that's the best way to say it. I mean, it was definitely a goalkeeping error. It led to some sort of suggestions of match fixing, all completely unfounded. Denver Barr tweeted afterwards something that people have said was relating to the game. I mean, it wasn't quite clear, but I think people reading between the lines suggested exactly what he thought of the situation. Turkish football has been dogged by match fixing in recent years. Fenerbahce currently banned from playing in European competition for alleged match fixing, something they've always denied. And now that there are sort of people throwing the same kind of mud at Galatasaray, I mean, we put the video out on the Twitter so people can make their own minds up, but it was certainly a goalkeeping error.
Yeah, and we're getting tweets in then of a goal between Torino and Empoli in Italy as well, which goalkeeper didn't do himself any glory.
That was a terrible own goal, but no suggestions in that one of any kind of wrongdoing. It was just
a bad back pass.
I think it was an okay back pass. It was just a terribly controlled moment from the goalkeeper that allowed Empoli to win by 1-0. But it certainly wasn't in Torino's favour to lose that game, whereas obviously Galatasaray going for the title, so that's why every point is so vital for them.
Mark, enjoy the footballing week. We'll chat next Tuesday.
Speak then.
Mark Langdon of the Racing Post. We're going to chat golf and we're going to check in on the on-post Ross in 60 seconds.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings.
Gary, we've breaking news. You're welcome back to the programme, by the way. There might well be an opening for Raheem Sterling at Manchester City because Scott Sinclair, the Raheem Sterling of his generation, has joined Aston Villa on a permanent deal.
Yeah, huge breaking news. Four-year contract.
Scott Sinclair, one of the greats of his time. One of the terribly unfulfilled talents of English football. Kieran, a Liverpool fan, has texted us to 51552 with a quote that he feels, and this is Kieran's opinion, suits Raheem Sterling. Keep quiet and let people think you're a fool rather than open your mouth and proving it. 51552 at Game On 2FM will get us as well. The on-post Ross continues to wind its way at considerable speed around Ireland. We're going to be in Ballina, isn't it, on Thursday evening, the Diamond Coast Hotel in Enniscrone, which is on the Sligo Mayo border, close enough to Ballina. If you'd like to come and say hello, I'll be there. Gary will be there. We've Eamon O'Hara and loads of other guests for you to meet on Thursday evening. But one man who will join us there as well joins us on the phone now, Shane Stokes. Shane, how are you?
How are you? All good, yeah. Greetings from a sunny Barna.
Okay, let me have a look.
Quite nice here this evening.
The 2FM garden looks kind of sunny, so I think it's not too bad on the East Coast either. In terms of general classification, are we pretty much where we were at this time yesterday?
We are, yeah. There was a break up the road today containing several Irish riders, but they were brought back in the last 3 kilometres, and there was a big group sprint to the line, so that really kept the overall classification the same. The winner in that sprint was the Italian rider Matteo Malucelli, I hope I pronounced that correct, who beat New Zealand's Alex Frame. Irish rider Peter Hawkins was fourth, so that was the best showing by the Irish, and there was a few others close by as well. So really that's the way the stage ended up. As I said, there was a break, but they were hauled back towards the end.
How good a Ross has it proven to be so far?
It's been quite interesting because it's been flatter than other years. So some people said it mightn't be decisive, but actually on the first day there was that break of 15 from which two guys pressed forward. So the time gaps are actually as big, if not bigger, than they would be if it was a hilly Ross. So I think there's wind, but also the aggressive racing has caused that difference. Mm. So yeah, it's been pretty exciting, and there's reason to believe that the next few days will see more of the same, and there'll be more reshuffling and suspense.
Yeah, and drama as well, and some of that coming away from the peloton. We've done a couple of times now, we've been out and about, and people always talk quite rightly about the heritage of the Ross and the great celebration that is the Ross. But maybe this year, more than other years, there's a bit of aggro behind the scenes, and you've kind of been caught up in some of it yourself.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting. There's an Italian rider, Francesco Reda, who was actually returning from a ban. He missed doping control, or refused doping control in 2013. He got an early card back into the sport because he cooperated, and he won the opening stage He then continued to lead the race after yesterday, except then after the stage finish, it was announced that he was disqualified. Basically, he had punctured and he held onto the team car while coming back up to the bunch. So he was out of the race. His team manager, Alberto Elli, who's a former pro rider, protested strongly at the finish, but was told that, you know, the decision was final. And Alberto Elli turned up at the team hotel last night of the race commissars who were discussing the matter. And he apparently tried to have his rider reinserted back into the race, was told this wasn't possible. And according to reports today, the official reports, he threatened the race officials and he was ejected from the race. So basically the manager and the lead rider were out. So the team responded today. Matteo Malicelli is from the same team. So they took the stage win, and I guess it was their way of showing that they're still in the race. But yeah, Alberto Elli is still around. He was he gave me some choice Italian words on the podium. He didn't appreciate the coverage of not only what happened, but also, you know, the mention of his own past, because he had a checkered past. So anyway, we're all hoping that things become more civil as the race continues, and it's all about the race and not about some background controversy.
Normally in situations like this, you would tell the riders to stay safe and make sure they get to Skerries in one piece for Sunday, but maybe I will extend that to you on this occasion, and between now and then we'll chat in the Diamond Coast Hotel on Thursday evening. Shane, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Shane Stokes joining us there. It's funny, we got one tweet in from Luke Duffy. We were mentioned earlier on the young fly I saw who had... I tell you what I'll do. If Raheem Sterling leaves Liverpool, I will personally replace the jersey of the kid that was on Dorset Street. So if you get in touch right now, tweet at GameOn2FM. If you've got the Raheem... I'm going to get a flood of Raheem Sterling jersey now. Luke Duffy, who works for Info, the photography agency, got Gervinho 22 in an Arsenal jersey. Next day, Aboué left the club and Gervinho switched to number 27. I had a mate who got Wayne Rooney 10 and then Rooney switched to 8 at United, so that's happened. And the biggest reaction we've got to Jason McAteer is people looking for us to ask him about Jenna Jameson. If you don't know who Jenna Jameson is... ask your father. Right, we will chat golf. Rory McIlroy, Wells Fargo, the weekend. How impressed were you by, what was it in the end, a 7-shot victory?
Yeah, it was. It broke the record. He shot 21 under. The previous was by Anthony Kim. It was 18 under, maybe 16 under actually. And he won by 7. He won on the canter. He shot 61 on Saturday. And he just kind of, his A game turned up, and his A game was unbeatable really. That's kind of what happened. On a course like that, he can produce his A game. You know, if you get somewhere a little quicker and bouncier, it might, and a little bit shorter maybe, he can't open the shoulders, as they say. But he was awesome at the weekend, and he probably for the first time this season, he complemented his long game with his putting.
I was going to ask you, well, we'll talk about the putting in a minute. Where are the main areas when you look at his game that there is still significant room for improvement? Like, how close do you think he is to being the complete package that he's capable of?
He is now, really. I mean,
simple as.
The only thing can stop him is himself, desire and fitness, really.
You heard the stories over the weekend about a 3-minute putting lesson. Greg Allen was chatting about it on Sunday Sport, that seemingly himself and Dave Stockton, who's his coach, putting had been a problem. 3 minutes, the whole issue sorted. Simply, he was raising his head at the moment of impact, which was raising his shoulder and affecting the club. And 3 minutes later, it's all done and dusted. And the weekend, he just goes and sweeps the field aside. But you were saying that's how it should be.
Yeah, golf at that level, when you're dealing with, you know, the Rolls Royce that Rory is, and golf is a chain reaction. So it's, you know, you sort out the first thing, and the other things won't happen with someone as efficient as Rory is. And that's what it should be, because I think you get a lot, there's a lot of overcoaching on tour, there's a lot of overcoaching in the amateur game too. I think, you know, it's important it's important to give somebody something to go work on. Not stand there for hours and hours and hours. You need to go understand what's been said to you. That's the most important thing. If you're getting a lesson from somebody and you don't understand what's been said to you, it's a complete waste of time. But a lot of people go and they give way too much credence maybe or respect to the person coaching them, but the message has to be clear. So when the message is clear, you just go, and Rory's that good. You see it with Michael Bannon as well. Michael is just there observing, whereas you would get, and he's in no way, you know, a media whore at all. He's just...
He's quite the opposite, actually.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Like, he's just... He's done a remarkable job at Rory, too.
But isn't it great? Like, one of the greatest things about the McIlroy story is the loyalty he's had to the people that have been there since day one. And, people might text in about the management company issues, but Michael Bannon would be a big part of that.
Yeah, but the management things are different things. Where, you know, they came on later in his career, and he's had two management companies. But you're talking about what really matters. What really matters is that his golf game is in shape. And the people that have helped his golf game get in shape have never wavered, really. I mean, his coach, Michael, has been with him since he's been 11 years of age, I think. So even younger, perhaps. And JP is... As Rory tweeted the other night, he's been there for all 11 wins on the PGA Tour. And that's, and JP came in for a lot of stick as well. But caddying for Rory is a steering job, really. It's crowd control.
It's a hard life to be. To talk about the Spanish Open, Michael Hoey, we talked about him last Thursday in the programme and a text in asking had he fulfilled his potential. He looked on course to have a great weekend when he shot a 68 on the Friday, fell back, finished one over in a tie for 31st. But is that not a bad outing for a field the like of which the Spanish Open would draw?
Well, I mean, if Michael never hits another golf shot, he's fulfilled his potential. Mm. He's gone from a top-end amateur, he's gone on to tour, he's earned a good living, and he's won five big events along the way. So he's had a great career, and he's still very young, and there's still a lot of good golf in Michael. And it wouldn't surprise me what he did with the game. I mean, he's the big thing from the kind of Michael Hoey fan point of view is he can be very frustrating at times. He's very high and low, but the last couple of years he's done a lot of work with Johnny Foster, who's making a name for himself as a top coach now, who also helps out Kevin Phelan and Justin Parsons, who has been very responsible for the big change in David Howell's fortune. So he's got a really good team around him. And that's important because, as you said earlier about McIlroy, he's had no real chop and change on the physical elements of his game, where a lot of the guys do. You know, they run with the herd a lot, and he's the next good coach. So continuity is very important. And Michael seems to have that now, and it's shown, like last season, you know, he made the most cuts he's ever made in his career. So it's, you know, things are on the up for him. But it's a huge time for Irish guys the next couple of weeks. I mean, Peter Lawrie's got an invite this week. It's a massive event for Peter, and next week as well.
Who do you fancy for the PGA Championship? The big guns have rolled into Wentworth this week.
I mean, if you're talking about from, you know, having a punt on it, I mean, Rory's 5-2. It's
interesting to see him tweeting about jet lag. And he did some thing in some science lab today, and what an ideal way to combat jet lag. But I'm presuming these guys are travelling in the lap of luxury, that it's not like you or me coming home in economy class from wherever in the States.
He's not in 100F with someone getting sick over his shoulder. Like, he's, I think he'll be okay.
And a 3-year-old screaming.
Yeah, but I mean, he won last year, but the course was quite soft when he won last year, so it played into his hands. It's going to be a lot faster this year. And I don't think at five, I mean, as good as he is, and he is by far the best player in the world, but realistically, he'll win maximum of 30-40% of the events he plays in, at a maximum. Mm. So at 5-2, I wouldn't go near him. I think Westwood's a good bet. He's a decent price. I think Jamie Donaldson is a good bet. And Emiliano Grillo is so consistent on tour without getting over the line. He was there again last week, and he's gone out to 50-1 because the field is a little bit stronger.
To finish, the US Open is on from the 18th of June in Chambers Bay in Seattle. You saw the story, Liam Kelly, great story in the Independent today about John Igo from Longford and Roscommon. Got the sixth slot of seven available at Bethpage State in a field of 112. The article was yesterday, and is on course now for the final round of sectional qualifying to get to the US Open, which would be a phenomenal achievement for an Irish amateur golfer.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I mean, Kevin Phelan did it a couple of years ago, and it's, I mean, we have some pros that don't even go to those qualifiers, which makes you wonder, really. Okay. Great story. Hopefully he does the business and gets in.
There we go. We will keep an eye on that. Next week, we're going to chat about the Battle of the Bay, which is landing in Ballymastrand this weekend, after a quick break. Stay with us.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. This is Damien O'Mara sitting in for Hugh Cahill. We are going to chat next about an event which will descend on Ballymastrand out in Ballymount. See, the name is in the title. The clue is in the title. The Battle of the Bay, the water sport festival for 2015, will take place this weekend. It's free entry both Saturday and Sunday from 10:30 until 6 p.m. And to chat about that and much more, we're joined by one of the men behind the company Pure Magic, who help people out and help people do things that you and I, Gary, let's be very honest, would never be able to do with regard to kites and surfboards and all sorts of stuff. Francois Calusi joins us. Francois, good evening to you.
Never
say never. Oh, jeez. Francois, I'm getting into the Eurovision. That's about as far as I'll get. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Good. For people who have no idea what the Battle of the Bay is, what is about to descend on the north side of Dublin this weekend?
Basically, a battle for the bay. So it's a nice beach party where we celebrate all the sports we're doing, from kite surfing, stand-up paddleboarding, wakeboarding, beach volleyball. We just spent a good afternoon on the beach. It's an international competition, but it's also a very family-friendly event where everyone can come, and we're going to have some live music from the King Kongers and some BJ. We got all the different ingredients from a good beach party, basically. Yeah.
And to look at it, aside from the party element, we have the opportunity to see at close quarters some of the world's best, and perhaps in the case of someone like Jade O'Connor, a homegrown Irish talent who has gone on to conquer the world.
Yes, of course, yes. So all these different events are international and lots of people come from abroad, and we also have like our own riders here competing at the best level. So it's a great show to watch and a high stress to compete with.
As an island nation, do we make the most as a country of the facilities that nature has provided to us and the tourism that we could be exploiting through various water sports and adventure sports around the coast?
Yeah, I mean, like, islands is gifted, and I think everything takes its time, but eventually we're really putting the island on the map as a premier destination for water sports and even actually extreme sports, and like especially Dolimans, like, facilities will come eventually. People start to understand the potential there, and that next to the city center in 5-10 kilometers, you really have like a fantastic beach. So it's all coming together, and I think it's a great asset for Dublin to have the beach. And for us, that's all the message during this event is like, come and enjoy the day on the beach in Dublin.
Okay, well, we mentioned the great homegrown talent. Delighted to say Jade O'Connor's joined us on the phone. Jade, how are you?
I'm doing great, Damien. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Looking forward to this weekend, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be amazing.
We were chatting there about whether or not we as a nation have maybe fully embraced the tourism and the international aspect of the facilities we have around the country. As an Irish person, how difficult or how tough a task has it been to climb to the significant achievement that you have of fifth in the world in your chosen sport?
I think that's a huge question. I think it comes with a lot of personal tenacity, and I think it's the one thing that you see about all us Irish sports people is that we're self-starters and we really are tenacious and go after things. Ireland is an amazing country to live in, but we're not great at supporting our athletes, I've got to tell you.
In terms of kiteboarding, how much talent exists within this country that we are yet to fully embrace or are yet to get the attention that perhaps us in the media have been guilty of not shining the spotlight on enough?
Yeah, kite surfing has been a slow burner over the last 10 years or so in Ireland, maybe a little bit longer. And while there are people like me who are at the top of the sport and a couple of us, you know, I think the future is definitely in the youth and in that pool, certainly around Kantar from Pure Magic, there's a whole gang of people that are young people that are really pushing their envelope, and that's exciting to see.
And, you know, I suppose it's like everything. People talk about golf and the Olympics and how sports being embraced by major governing bodies will, you know, shine the spotlight on it. And that applies equally to kiteboarding as with any other sport.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that now that we're in the professional era of sports, I don't think that there's really much level of amateurism left. Anybody who's going after anything worthwhile in sport is training just like a professional, regardless of their income. And I think that in the higher profile sports, you know, definitely there's the opportunity for great sponsorship. I'm very lucky to be sponsored by goldenpages.ie, who obviously make my campaign possible. But I think that what we need is stewardship. I think that what we need is for companies to support young athletes before, you know, they're getting press and recognition.
Okay.
I think that's a very, very important part. We have it in the rugby clubs, foreign players could come over and, you know, they were sorted out to a certain extent with jobs and careers and you know, helped get into Irish society so they could train and support the club.
Okay.
I think that we still need to grow with that.
Jade, I'm telling you, I'm over on time, so we wish you well for the weekend. Thanks very much for joining us on the programme. And Francois, before we finish up, just for people, if you're interested, just point the car towards Dollymount this weekend and come down and see what's on offer.
See it again, sorry.
For people that are interested, just get to Dollymount this weekend and make most of it.
Exactly, yeah. Come to Dollymount,
okay.
Saturday and Sunday, and you can take all the information on the Facebook page, Battle for the Bay. And we have we're going to be under a very lovely Irish sun. It's going to be mighty crack.
Okay, you're a more optimistic man than I. We wish you well for the weekend. Good to talk to you, Francois and Jade, in advance of that. Gary, I will see you on Thursday. Thank you to JJ. Thank you to Andrew. Louise McSharry is on the way. Stand by, and we will chat tomorrow at 7.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.